I'm going to try this one more time, okay?
Hello there, I'm Julian Fleischer, host of the Naked American Songbook. Here are some special moments we want you to hear.
Are you rolling?
Yeah, of course. Please.
Good.
All right. Should we start in a more business-like way?
We can sort of just, you know, ease into it naturally, as it appears we already sort of are. You know, sometimes these off-camera moments are the best ones. I don't have to tell you that, right? I mean, you make radio for a living. You're Ira Glass.
Hi, Julian.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Normally, I would welcome you to my show, but...
But you're here in my studio.
Yeah, this is a first for us.
I know, and I let you get too loud when you said welcome. I overmodulated. I hadn't gotten a proper level on your voice.
Oh, really? Yeah, I don't really ride a high or a low. I tend to careen wildly up and down.
Oh, see, that's a good way to be.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, you have made a national brand out of being very sort of... In the middle of the waveform.
Yeah, but to say that makes it sound like I had an intention to do that. It's more like that would be where my personality sits. Whereas obviously your personality has a greater dynamic range, more highs and lows, and bigger and smaller.
Right, and look at which one of us has a shelf full of Peabody Awards outside the glass.
Well, I think even disposition might lead you to Peabody's, but that doesn't necessarily correlate with personal happiness or a sense of feeling and joy in life and an embracing of the everyday moment.
Okay, so go take him off the shelf. I didn't think so. I called Ira Glass's bluff. Speaking of Peabody's, you and I are both from Baltimore.
Yes, we are.
Where the Peabody Conservatory of Music stands. Did you ever take classes there or anything like
that? No, my older sister Randy did. She was a very serious pianist. Like, we didn't even own a piano, and then Randy saw a piano at somebody's house and was like, I want that. So we bought an upright piano, my parents did, and she went into classes at the Peabody very quickly. And was very, very serious and did consider, like, you know, becoming a classical pianist for a while when she was a kid, and then ultimately decided, for a bunch of reasons, including my mom putting such pressure on her to go pro, that she'd quit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big decision.
Yeah.
Comes at a high cost.
Interestingly, like, she's the most psychologically healthy person in the family, I think. And as a kid, like, my mom really, really wanted her to be a musician. And my mom was so intrusive about it that at some point, like when Randy was like 12 and was not like a particularly assertive child, and when Randy would come out of her lesson, my mom wasn't allowed to ask her any questions about it in the car because it was so intrusive. And then after my mom died, my sister started taking lessons and started playing again. She, in fact, just at her 60th birthday, she did a recital. And played beautifully. Like, she plays, man. She's a really good pianist.
Fascinating. So your mom had to pass away so that she could have space, some sort of psychic space,
yeah,
to get back to the keyboard.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And I feel like it's such a an act of psychological health to know, oh, I really like this. I'm just going to do this again, and I have the freedom to do it. And then in a weird variation on the story, and maybe this goes one step too far, when after we had all moved out of the house and were adults and all that, my mom started taking piano lessons, and she would play all the pieces that my sister played when my sister was a kid, but badly.
This is like an outtake from Gypsy. You know? The whole piano segment from Gypsy.
I had a dream. I dreamed it for you, June. It wasn't for me, Herbie. And if it wasn't for me, then where would you be?
Are you aware, I've told you this on several occasions, but your mom and my mom were best friends from high school. They went to Forest Park together.
Every time I see you and you tell me this, I remember it again. I think somehow it's information that it's really hard to absorb.
You try having her as a mother. I'll tell you how hard to absorb it is. I remember back in 1997 or something, my mom saying to me, Shirley's son has a show on NPR. Why don't you have a show on NPR?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so your mom was a kind of a pressuring sort of a...
No. I mean, my mom applied a lot of pressure, but in a different way.
Poor girl without a dowry can't be so particular. You want hair, marry a monkey. Even a poor girl without a dowry has to look at her husband sometime.
A husband is not to look at. A husband is to get.
When recording our Naked American episode with Ira Glass, the This American Life host patiently listened to me wax on about Joni Mitchell. When we got back to Ira, we weaved a web from Joni to Springsteen to Sinatra, and here's a stopover at Taylor Swift, a new addition to our Naked American songbook extras.
Anyway.
Well, let me ask you a question. What are you listening to right now?
What I'm listening to right now, there's no system to it at all. In a very real way, the most of the music that I'm listening to is fast pop music that I listen to when I'm on the treadmill. I know some people can listen to podcasts and stuff on treadmills. And honestly, sometimes I have to just because I have homework and I've got to like listen to stuff while I'm running. But I find it much easier to run if I'm listening to music. And so I have an entire iPod full of like just fast music to run at. And so there's a lot of like Katy Perry. There's a lot of like Nicki Minaj. There's a lot of at some point I found L. King, who I really love. Who sings in this like totally old school 1950s sort of Memphis-y way.
Yeah, she's got some extra slap on that reverb too.
Yeah, she does.
She's picking up on that sound.
For sure. Like I listen to her a lot.
Let's talk about her song X's and O's, which I really enjoy and have been listening to for a while, but I think I came to it through the video, which has just lots of beefcake in it.
Oh, you see, I've never even seen the video.
Well,
I don't want to see the video. I don't want to know anything
you
about
don't,
her.
Yeah, you shouldn't see the video then because it's not for straight men.
Is that true?
Now you want to see it. Yeah, I mean, she's a very voluptuous blonde. She's terrific looking. And the video is her essentially kissing off a lot of...
Pretty boys.
And they're in various states of undress.
Seems fine.
But that's how I came to it. Like somebody posted it for its visuals. Not for the song. And then I listened to the song. I was like, oh, this is actually a terrific tune. This is like an old school country pop tune. And she delivers it with complete conviction.
Yeah, no, I feel like I'm buying what she's selling at exactly the level she's selling it.
Let's hear how it gets sold. Now, there's a lyric.
Yeah.
It makes me think that a lot of the best songwriting is happening in Nashville these days.
Is she in Nashville? I think she's in Hollywood.
But the writing is coming out of Nashville. Like the lyric writing, which contains cleverness and thematic consistency.
Do you like Taylor Swift as a writer?
I don't know her well enough to be.
Oh, my God. I think she's such a good writer.
Everybody says the same thing.
And
do you know Kiki and Herb?
I know that they exist.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Kenny Melman, the genius pianist and curator of their music, among others, he also plays for the Julie Ruin and other groups. He's always maintained that she's a fabulous songwriter.
I have to say, she's really masterful. And I know this is like a really pretentious thought, but I'm going to stand by it, which is I think if she weren't a young blonde girl, people would understand she's like Bruce Springsteen. You know what I mean? Like, she's got a really, like a really visceral sense of how to make a pop song. And she just tries all different kinds, more kinds than Bruce does. And there's like a real, I don't know, like, I respect, I have, I mean, it's
ridiculous. Are you willing to go on record as having said what you just said?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, like, I mean, I'd say I respect her. Like, she doesn't need my respect. She's like a superstar. But like, yeah, like, I feel like she just tries different stuff. She has this song called Holy Ground that if I could ever meet her, my question to her would be, are you just knocking off U2? Like, I feel like she just decided, like, oh, that thing that Bono does in U2 where like the song is, it's sort of thrumming along at one level and then you're just going to make it pop and explode. That's not like any of her other songs. It's totally different. And it's almost like the whole song is one note, just kind of grinding along. And then at some point, it just does this soaring thing that Bono does in a lot of songs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, this is more like his music than like her music. And if I could meet either of them, that is what I'd want. I'd be like, is this just in my head?
Let's listen to that.
Okay, so even the way the drumming comes in. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a country song. I mean, she's moved away from country anyway, but
this could also be a production choice.
Yeah, but the writing supports it. It's just like a very slow build, but the music's moving very fast, but she's going slow, which is obviously a lot of music. And then there's a, watch what she does at the end of this. And then they go small again. Like, you could feel that she's going to build and build and build. But, like, for now, it's like, let's take it down slow. This is so, like a U2 song.
Right.
Can you picture Bono singing this?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, she's got her choruses stay in one place, then her bridge is going to go somewhere else. And you might enjoy it if you don't already know. Songwriters from the era of Tin Pan Alley referred to the bridge as the release.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Which is what we're about to hear, a release. Tension is built up in the choruses, and there's a release. It takes you to a whole new place, usually well above the chorus, and they come back, which is another story structure which American musical theater songwriters perfected. AABA.
Wow. Even this, like, you can just picture Bono singing all this.
And that makes it better?
No, it's just like, no.
There's a dialogue between her and him that you like.
In my mind,
right,
yeah.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I got it.
Like,
but that's a completely legitimate dialogue,
yeah.
You know? The one in your mind is no less valid than the one that might...
Yeah, just the way that chorus is working is like his songs, not like her songs. This is more like her, this little...
I think part of the reason I don't listen to her is her voice does not do anything for me.
Wow. No. I think there are songs where there's like more grain in her voice that I think you would understand better. Like, you should listen to the live recording. I know that, like, I'm so in deep of
That's where we want you, Ira.
I mean, like, you should listen to the live recording of her singing... what's it called? It should have said no. Should have said no. Listen to Should Have Said No.
The live recording of Should Have Said
No. Or even listen to the, yeah, or listen to.
How about if we put that on our show page? Because I don't really want to get into.
No, I'm saying you personally.
I know. Just Julian. Here's your homework for the night. Here's your punishment.
I don't know. I think, I don't know. Like, Should Have Said No.
You should have said no. You should have gone home. You should have thought twice before you let it all go. You should have known the word. But what you did would hurt. Get back to me. Get back. forgiveness at my feet. Because you should have said no, baby, and you might still have me.
Should have said no, yeah.
Are you aware of this whole situation with Joni Mitchell and her?
No.
Well, there was talk, as there often is, as there, I guess every year there's talk of a Joni Mitchell biopic, which would be interesting to see. Joni is my favorite of all time, so I would definitely be interested. But there was talk of Taylor Swift playing the part, and it was Joni herself who just smacked that idea down right away. And when Joni speaks, you don't really get to decide.
Hmm. They should get Tavi Gevinson.
Yeah. Snap, snap, snap.
I mean, the question would
be... She's not a star, though.
Well, that's good. Sometimes these are the things that make stars. I mean, the Selena biopic made a star out of J-Lo. Nobody really knew who she was, mm-hmm. and it turned her into a superstar. That's often... The biopic is often the way to stardom for an unknown actor. So there you go. But I would be interested to know whether they would decide to use her voice or not.
Yeah.
Because Joni's voice is so distinctive.
And, yeah.
But you compare... You straight up just compared Taylor Swift... songwriting abilities to those of Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, and I really super love Bruce Springsteen. Do 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 do
do do do do do do. Can I ask you if you think about Elvis Presley at all?
I was touring for 4 years in a dance show where we played a lot of Elvis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like a lot of like late Elvis after he had already become a kitsch version of himself, and in a way, that's why we chose the songs that we did.
Who do you like? Who do you esteem more highly, Sinatra or Elvis?
I connected to Sinatra more because I just know all the songs. I know everything. Whereas there's a bunch of early Elvis songs that I really, really love.
Are they songs you can love without Elvis singing them? Or is it Elvis singing them?
I think it's Elvis singing them. Like that song, like, train a ride 16 coaches long. Like his version of that. What song? What's that called? Is it just...
You got me on that one. I don't
train
like Elvis. So I'm just...
What, you don't like Elvis? Why are we talking about this?
Because I want to know if you like Elvis. Because I'm curious, especially for straight guys, you know, who like Sinatra. If I think there's an interesting connection to Elvis there. Sometimes.
It's sometimes. Just, yeah.
I think like Taylor Swift. Like I realize that everybody loves Elvis, but I personally don't get it. It just never appealed to me.
Wow. It's Elvis. Mystery Train.
Ride 16 coaches long. Train a ride 16 coaches long. Well, that long black train got my baby and gone. Train, train. Coming round the bend. Train, train. Coming round the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again. No, not again.
This song is like, it's like... When you hear this song just feels like it comes from such an ancient place in America. Like, this song is bigger than all of us.
Right.
It's like it's so totally solid and built out of, it's like the cockroach, like just unstoppable.
That's how I feel about Old Man River.
It's like a lot like that, actually, yeah.
It just sounds like somebody carved it out of the stone. It was already there.
Yeah, I love that song.
Old Man River, that old man river. Must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, and them that plants them is soon forgotten. But Old Man River, he just keeps.
Like a lot of the songs, it's interesting that we're talking about today, like I run through my head all the time.
They do?
Yeah, Old Man River. Like a lot of these songs, yeah, 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 for sure.
Do you feel, therefore, that you are at least to some small extent a product of these songs?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm not totally sure what that means, actually, but I feel like I connect with them and they mean something to me. Like I think once you're over 20, it's rare to find any song that connects with you in a way that any song can connect with you when you're younger than 20.
Why is that?
You're just more open to experience, mm-hmm. you know, and your emotions are more right there. Chuck Klosterman talks about this in one of his books. He says that, you know, the way he felt about bands when he was a teenager, like it would be crazy in his 40s to feel that way about a new band. Like that would be, you don't identify with things in that way. You have an identity of your own. You don't need to get an identity from the band you love. So our relationship to music and to culture is different as we get older because we are more solidly formed and we're not looking for an identity.
That's a little sad to me.
Yeah, to me too.
I guess I'm glad that in my youth, when I was doing that, at least I was choosing with the help of my family and like you, my older sister, who was a big part of my musical development, was choosing good things. You know, like I sort of worry about today's kids because like the stuff that's on the radio is almost unlistenably bad. At least the stuff that we were coming up with had some, I think, some value. I know that's a total judgment call.
No, that's the kind of like old manism that I 100% oppose.
I recognize that. But if you walk around like the lobby of like, I don't know, an H&M or some.
Yeah, and there's Jay-Z or Beyonce, like that's some, those are great songs.
Jay-Z and Beyonce are great songwriters where they have a something, but they're the exception to the rule right now. A lot of the stuff that's out there is just terrible. It's the same three chords delivered.
No, I know. Like the general level guys of pop Sweden. Music on the radio
right.
back in the 60s, like there was a lot of more stuff that was really pretty interesting. But I just think that any time we find ourselves saying things were better when we were younger, we should just stop.
Yes, we should. But some cliches are true.
No, I don't think it's true. I don't. I mean, and even if it's true, I think we should just fucking shut up about that. You know, one of the things that happened between when we grew up and now is that the culture moved from expressing itself through music to expressing itself through television. And so all that energy and creative foment that was happening in pop music now happens in pop TV. And, you know, pop music has suffered, but there's still just incredible music being made.
Oh, I think that's true. It's just, it isn't on the radio for the most part.
Yeah, but nothing's on the radio because the radio sucks. Like, yes, true.
I guess you would know. You're an authority.
I mean, I just know about my little corner of the radio. Like, in my corner of the radio, it's going fine. But generally, yeah, like, radio is pretty
quality.
Bad. Yeah. Radio's pretty bad, mostly. Yeah, yeah.
So let me ask you, what, Ira Glass, what do songs mean to you?
Wow, what a weird, interesting question. It's like asking, like, what does writing mean to you? Or what does food mean to
right,
you?
Right, or gravity, or but
what do songs mean to me? I mean, when a song is working, it's like a complete dream and a world that it takes you into, and a story that has a middle and an end, and characters and all the feelings of everything that you could feel, you know, in 3 or 4 minutes.
So it's like a concentrated experience of something valuable.
See, you're saying this so much better than I am.
No, I'm just trying. I'm just trying to paraphrase. I'm trying to translate back to you what I think I'm hearing.
Yeah, like a song does.
You care deeply about songs.
Wow, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I have songs that I love for sure.
But your world is soaked in music. Your entire childhood is told in show tunes and. You have a commanding knowledge of a lot of great artists and their work. You work in music. You sing songs. You write songs. You perform them sometimes.
Yes. All of these things are true. I don't know. I don't think of myself as like a music person at all.
Really?
I don't know. Like, yeah. Like, I think of myself. I don't know.
You think of yourself as a...
Documentary. I don't know. I think of myself as a reporter so much more. And the world that I'm in is so much more like figuring out characters and scenes and story and narrative but obviously like then we put music underneath the whole thing, so obviously like music is so in there, but I feel like I can go for a year without listening to any new artists or anything. Like, I'm not in it in that way that people who are really into music.
But are you listening to the old artists during that time? Are you going back to the stuff that feeds your spirit?
No, No, I almost never listened to music that I liked when I was young. I never listened to the old Springsteen songs or Talking Heads. Like, honestly, like, I don't like going back to stuff that I'm used to. I only usually like what's new. And I feel bored with stuff that I already know. And I want something new. And, like, occasionally, you know, I'll listen to, like, you know, I'll go through, like, a little talk. It's like somehow David Byrne will come up and then I'll listen to, like, a record or two. No, for a while, and then, but I feel like, no, I'm new. I want something new.
That's interesting.
But then I feel like I haven't, you know, to be in a world where you're finding new music all the time, you really have to make an effort. Like, and there were periods in my life where I willfully, it was just like, I'm going to read stuff and listen to stuff and read reviews and, like, and just look around for stuff. But now I'm so busy, like, I don't have time to do that. And so I end up in a kind of lazy sort of loop where, you know, like, the last time I bought music was, you know, not for a story or something. Last time I bought music was literally just like, I need fast music to run to that I haven't heard before. And I'll just go on to iTunes and just look at the pop charts and just, like, sample 20 songs and then pay 99 cents for a bunch of them. And then that's my playlist for a little while. So I think, like, somebody who really loves songs would not be doing what I do. Like, I spend way more time reading Breitbart than looking for songs.
Do you think that's regrettable?
That I do that? No. I made these choices. No, I feel we live in a completely fascinating world. And I'm lucky that for my job, I get to poke around and look at it.
There's more of that on our show page, nakedamericansongbook.org. And you can also find us, as always, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on all the media's social. Please subscribe to our podcast wherever you prefer to park your podcast. And while there, please give us a rating. I'm not here to beg. I'm here to tell you, give us a rating. It helps us spread the word about what we're doing here. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WQXR, and WNYC Studios in New York City. Our Naked American Songbook team includes producer Aaron Dalton, associate producer Ellie Smerling, production assistant Hilary Bonhomme, and executive producer Mike Shobe. Our theme music is written by me. I'm Julian Fleischer. Thanks again for listening. Keep calm and keep it naked. He's Jewish. Is that right? Where's the G? I thought there was a G in there.
Wow, he's Jewish. I love that was the thing you just said. You had to plant a flag in that for the people. Oh my God.
It is hot in here, isn't it? All right, let's listen to...